When you observe a suspension bridge from a distance, you see this graceful, uninterrupted line across the horizon. The structure appears entirely static. To the naked eye, it looks effortless.
Right. We look at it and assume it just stands there naturally.
Exactly. But that perception is a complete illusion. The reality of that bridge is a state of constant, immense tension. I mean, you have millions of pounds of steel actively fighting gravity.
Which requires continuous engineering, routine inspection, and, you know, deep structural maintenance just to remain standing.
And that distinction between what looks effortless to an outside observer and what actually requires immense physical effort beneath the surface, that is exactly how most of us view the stock market.
We tend to mistake the output for the mechanism. We see the lines going up on a chart, and we assume the growth is simply a natural law.
Today, we are looking under the hood of those mechanisms. Welcome to the deep dive. We are conducting a rigorous examination of corporate growth structures, drawing directly from an article in the Averaging Up collection titled "The Imperfect Bee."
It is a critical map to draw.
Our mission for you today is to map the specific territory where the vast majority of the world's greatest businesses actually operate. We are exploring the highly complex spectrum between perfect, natural growth, and entirely mechanical, capital-intensive expansion.
But before we delve into the article's core thesis regarding that middle territory, we really must establish the essential vocabulary of this framework. I mean, we have to define the fundamental physics of how businesses generate returns.
Right, starting with two basic operating forces. The author lays out a foundation stating that every business contains these two forces. The first is what the article calls the A.
Which is the toll.
Exactly, the toll.
Wow.
It is the cash generated right now, representing the short duration of the business. The article provides some highly illustrative examples of this.
Visa collecting 0.2% on every transaction.
Yes, or S&P Global taking a rating fee on corporate bond issuances. Coca-Cola generating revenue from supermarket shelf space this quarter. The A is the present tense of a business. It is the cash it generates simply by existing today.
The second force is the B. This is the wave. It represents cash later, the structural growth that arrives over time.
So for Visa, the D is not the individual transaction today.
Right. It is the global multi-decade digitalization of payments. For Moody's, it is the ongoing expansion of global debt. The B is the future tense. It is the structural tailwind that compounds the A into something much larger over a long duration.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have the present cash flow, the A, and the future structural growth, the B. The Averaging Up collection initially defines two extremes based on exactly how these two forces interact with each other.
When the A and the B fuse multiplicatively, the business is classified as a free surfer.
A free surfer?
Yes. In this state, growth costs nothing. The wave arrives entirely without capital expenditure.
So meaning the growth just happens on its own?
Basically, if global internet commerce grows by 10%, Visa's transaction volume grows by 10%. But Visa does not have to build 10% more data centers or hire 10% more engineers to capture it. The financial cost of B is zero.
The author defines this as the natural B.
Exactly.
Then on the opposite end of the spectrum, growth is entirely additive. This is the mechanical compounder, where growth directly costs capital. The article cites railroads spending billions of dollars to deepen their physical networks, or GE Aerospace investing $15 billion per new engine program.
Right. Every single dollar of expansion requires a corresponding dollar of capital.
If a railroad wants to move 10% more freight, they have to buy more locomotives and lay more steel.
The B in that mechanical scenario is expensive. But we should note that when it stays inside a protected competitive moat, it compounds very reliably.
Which sets up the core of our analysis today.
Yeah.
The author points out that the vast territory between those two poles had not yet been fully categorized. I mean, most companies are neither pure free surfers nor pure mechanical compounders.
We exist somewhere in the middle.
Yes, and the article names this middle ground, the imperfect bee.
But before we define the exact architecture of the imperfect bee, we must address a perceptual trap that many investors fall into when evaluating growth. The author calls this the illusion of the free bee.
This is a vital concept. The text uses Warren Buffett's experience with Apple to illustrate it. Apple is the most valuable position in Berkshire's history, and Buffett famously stated regarding their Apple investment, "We did not do a damn thing."
He bought the stock and watched it compound.
Right. From his vantage point, the growth looked entirely natural and free.
But the framework clarifies a crucial distinction here. We must evaluate the architectural structure of the business itself, not the passive experience of the equity holder.
So at the corporate level, Apple's B is 100% mechanical.
Absolutely. Tim Cook must execute relentlessly every single quarter. He has to design new silicon, manage the most complex physical supply chain on Earth, and iterate on hardware and software simultaneously.
The author provides a highly effective thought experiment to test this structural reality, which is the disappearing CEO test. The premise is simple. If the CEO disappeared tomorrow, would the growth continue?
And for a free surfer like Visa or a natural toll like Google Search, the answer is yes.
The transactions and the search queries would continue to slow unabated for years.
But for Apple, the answer is no. If the meticulous supply chain execution stops, the machine stops entirely. Buffett's experience of a free ride is merely the financial output of Tim Cook's relentless mechanical effort.
It makes me think of a high-speed train. As a passenger, like Buffett in this scenario, you sit in a quiet dining car. You look out the window and you feel like you are gliding effortlessly across the landscape.
It feels quite smooth.
Yes, it feels like magic. But underneath you, in the engine room, the operators are burning massive amounts of fuel, which in a corporate sense is capital and human effort, just to keep the train moving. If they stop shoveling coal, the train stops dead.
So I have to ask, is a pure mechanical bee inherently inferior then, simply because it requires this constant, relentless execution?
This raises an important question. The answer is no, it is not inherently inferior, but it is structurally different. Apple is a brilliantly executed mechanical bee. Returning to your train metaphor, the investor in the dining car is simply benefiting from the grueling labor in the engine room.
Recognizing that perceptual illusion is what allows us to properly analyze the business where the growth engine is literally divided. So if Apple is an example of a purely mechanical engine disguised as free growth, what does it look like when a company actually splits the difference?
Right. How do we measure a business that is half natural and half mechanical?
Exactly. This brings us to the actual architecture of the imperfect bee. To measure the quality of an imperfect bee, the author outlines a three-part sequential test. The first question examines the ratio.
Meaning the proportion.
Yes. What is the exact proportion of natural growth to mechanical growth within the business? If a company has a highly natural component, it pushes the overall business closer to the purity of a free surfer.
And if the mechanical component dominates, it sits closer to a traditional heavy compounder, like a railroad.
Precisely. The second question of the test addresses anchoring. Is the mechanical bee operating safely inside the company's competitive moat?
The article references Bruce Greenwald's insight on competitive advantage here, applying it at the sub-business level. Greenwald notes that if capital is spent outside the franchise, on a level playing field where competitors have equal footing, that capital earns no excess return.
Let us ground that in a tangible example for the listener. Think of spending outside the moat like a dominant technology company deciding to launch a generic airline.
Their historical advantage in software means absolutely nothing in aviation.
Right. They are competing on a level playing field against established airlines. Therefore, they have to spend massive amounts of capital just to survive, yielding zero excess profit.
So if the mechanical bee is outside the moat, the sheer cost of that growth is almost irrelevant because it generates no structural advantage.
Which leads directly to the third question in the sequence, self-financing. Does the A, the present-day toll, generate enough cash to self-finance the mechanical B?
The article describes this as the mature form of the dual framework.
Conceptually, this means the natural toll pays for the capital-intensive wave entirely, without requiring the company to take on outside debt or dilute its shareholders.
So what does this all mean? It means this three-part test is a strict sequential filter. I mean, if the ratio of natural to mechanical is heavily skewed toward mechanical, or if the capital is being spent entirely outside the competitive moat, the other factors barely matter.
The quality of that imperfect bee is fundamentally compromised from the very start.
To move from abstract theory to concrete reality, we must apply this three-part quality test to the company the article identifies as the ultimate archetype of the imperfect bee. That company is Alphabet.
Let us start by analyzing Alphabet's A, its present-day toll. Alphabet possesses two primary tolls. First is Google Search, which commands over 90% of the global search market.
The article emphasizes a crucial distinction regarding the nature of this advantage. Google Search is a behavioral moat, not a switching cost moat.
Right. A switching cost moat is something like Microsoft 365, where enterprise IT departments renew contracts because migrating away is financially and operationally punishing.
With Google, people stay because there is simply no alternative at that scale and quality. They're not locked into a contract, yet the behavior is completely entrenched.
The second toll is YouTube, which functions independently but shares very similar structural characteristics. It is a massive network of creators and viewers reinforcing each other. Again, there are no contracts locking the viewers in and no true alternatives operating at that specific scale.
Together, Search and YouTube generate roughly 75% of Alphabet's overall revenue. These are the cash-generating A forces. Then we examine Alphabet's B, the wave. This is where the structural division becomes highly apparent.
The natural B is the digitalization of global advertising. As global internet usage naturally increases, digital ad revenue increases. There is effectively zero marginal cost for Alphabet to process each additional search query.
But then we look at their mechanical B. This is Google Cloud and artificial intelligence. These divisions require massive race-level capital expenditures against exceptionally well-funded competitors like Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, OpenAI, and Meta.
The article introduces a compelling quote from the poet Leonard Cohen here, one that anchors the entire Averaging Up Collection's perspective on this framework. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
In this specific framework, the mechanical B is the crack. It is the imperfection.
It is the heavy, capital-intensive burden placed upon an otherwise naturally compounding machine.
Wait, I have to press you on this structural setup, though. Alphabet is burning tens of billions of dollars trying to maintain pace in the generative AI arms race. Amazon and Microsoft are doing the exact same thing.
Yes, they are.
So how is that not just a massive bonfire of capital on a level playing field? How is it anchored? And how exactly is the light getting in through that particular crack?
What's fascinating here is the specific mechanism of that anchoring. We have to return to the second question of the quality test. Alphabet's mechanical B, its AI expenditure, is deeply tethered to its A.
Beating the toll.
Exactly. The proprietary data generated from Search, from YouTube, Android, and Maps constitutes an unmatched reservoir of human behavioral information. This unique data directly feeds and trains their AI models.
I see.
Therefore, the mechanical bee is not floating out in a generic, defenseless space. It is anchored firmly inside the behavioral moat.
They are not building a generic airline. They're building an engine that runs on a fuel only they possess. And we have to look at the third condition, self-financing. To ground this in reality, the search engineers and the ad revenue they generate are effectively paying the massive server bills for the AI researchers.
And they fund this without issuing debt and without shareholder dilution. Furthermore, returning to the first question of the test, the ratio remains a favorable 75% natural to 25% mechanical.
So Alphabet represents high-quality imperfection because it passes all three sequential tests.
Precisely.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Alphabet represents a highly favorable, stable position today. But the article stresses a critical property of the imperfect B. It is a living system. A company's position on this gradient can, and often does, drift.
The structural integrity is not permanent. It demands constant reevaluation by the observer.
The text presents the case study of Microsoft to illustrate a negative structural drift. In 2019, Microsoft was categorized as a high-quality imperfect B. They were cloud-first, driven by the natural toll of Microsoft 365, and relatively capital-light.
The mechanical component of their growth was modest back then.
But observe the shift by 2026. The mechanical B has exploded to $190 billion in annual capital expenditure. And crucially, a massive portion of this is being spent on a level playing field in the AI infrastructure race.
This represents the breaking of the dual framework. Microsoft's ratio shifted unfavorably from natural toward mechanical. Because the immense capital expenditure is happening largely outside a proprietary data moat, the anchoring weakened.
Right.
And most importantly, the self-financing condition is now deeply strained.
Right.
The mechanical B grew significantly faster than the natural A could comfortably contain it.
The article highlights an actionable consequence of this structural deterioration. It notes that this specific mechanical drift is precisely why the prominent investor Chris Hahn cut 84% of his Microsoft position while simultaneously increasing his holdings in Alphabet.
He recognized the shift in the gradient and reallocated capital accordingly.
It is equally important to note that companies can also move up the gradient. A business that actively reduces its mechanical B can ascend toward higher quality.
The author cites S&P Global for this. They executed a spin-off of their mobility division. By removing that heavy mechanical B from their corporate structure, they left behind four divisions driven almost entirely by the natural B.
The purity of the overall business increased, and they moved up the gradient toward the free surfer ideal.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the fundamental takeaway is that while the free surfer is a permanent structural state, the imperfect bee is merely a snapshot in time. It demands rigorous reevaluation at every single capital allocation cycle.
Because capital allocation dictates the ratio. The ratio dictates the anchoring. And the anchoring dictates the ultimate quality of the business.
That is exactly right.
To bring all of this together, the article provides a complete map of the investable spectrum. At the very top is the natural bee, the free surfer, where structural growth costs zero capital.
Just below that is the high-quality, imperfect bee represented by Alphabet, where the natural component dominates and the mechanical part is safely anchored and self-financed.
Moving down the map, we find the drifting mid-quality businesses and then the low-quality imperfect bee represented by Microsoft in 2026, where the mechanical component begins to dominate and break the self-financing duel.
Below that, we exit the hybrid model entirely and find the pure mechanical bee inside a moat. These are the railroads. Growth is expensive, but structurally protected by the sheer physical impossibility of building a competing rail line.
And finally, at the very bottom, is the mechanical bee outside the moat, where capital is deployed on a level playing field with absolutely no competitive protection.
It is essential for you to recognize that there are only about 5 true free surfers in the entire public market. Therefore, the vast majority of your time conducting analysis will be spent navigating this imperfect bee territory.
Right. The question you face is never whether a business has a crack. Every single business below the free surfer inherently does.
The objective is to apply this rigorous 3-part test to determine if the crack lets the light in or if it is simply structurally compromising the foundation of the enterprise.
Which leaves you with a final thought to mull over today. Look at the largest holding in your own portfolio. You might know its current revenue, and you might have a strong thesis on its competitive advantage. But ask yourself, what is its exact ratio of natural to mechanical growth today?
And far more importantly, in which direction is that ratio drifting as management allocates capital this quarter?
I highly encourage you to explore the original framework and related articles at averagingup.com to continue this study. Because returning to where we started, you cannot just look at the smooth glass of the corporate skyscraper from the street and assume it is stable. You have to look at the structural tension underneath. You have to measure the steel.
You have to know exactly what is holding the building up